Thank you. Seemed like you were clapping for me, or I don't know if you're clapping for Chuck. Thank you so much, Independent Institute, for organizing this. I'll keep my remarks brief as well, as I know that the Q&A is going to be the most interesting section. Let me say a couple of things. I think we're facing a situation in the Middle East right now, particularly a situation between the United States and Iran, in which we may believe that we have a lot of options, but we don't. Most of these options, most of these different policies are illusionary at best, and they will deteriorate into one out of two different directions. Either a comprehensive negotiated agreement between the United States and Iran, as well as other countries in the region, or a military conflict. All other policies, all other options are not going to be stable, and they will sooner or later deteriorate into one of these two. Unfortunately, the longer we wait, the more we pursue other illusionary policies, the higher the risk will be that the policy and the direction we will end up in is the military one. And let me explain a couple of reasons for why I think that is. Time is not really on the side of diplomacy or on the side of ideas such as sanctions. The precondition that the United States put in order to negotiate with Iran, that Iran must end all of its enrichment activities before the United States would join the talks, have been utterly counterproductive. Just take a look at the track record. The Iranians had approximately 164 centrifuges last May when that offer was made. Today, they're sitting somewhere close to 1,800, and they will probably reach 3,000 in the next couple of months, and 3,000 has been set as this arbitrary line in which the Iranians would have a small-scale enrichment program. The argument at the time was you cannot negotiate while the Iranians are enriching because that would be like negotiating while they have a gun to your head. Well, in retrospect, we can see the gun has been pointed in the other direction because the absence of negotiation is exactly what won the Iranians time and enabled them to continue with their program and put together far more centrifuges than they had when the first thing started. Now, clearly, both sides have invested a tremendous amount of face into this process. It's not just Iranian pride that is driving this process. There's a tremendous amount of Western pride involved as well. And it's going to be very difficult to be able to get to the negotiating table and pretend as if that precondition wasn't there. One potential solution would be a concept that was thrown out in various Track 2 discussions about a year ago, an idea of freeze for freeze instead of suspend for suspend. Suspend for suspend would basically mean that the Iranians would have to suspend all their activities, basically backtracking their program, which is obviously more and more difficult the more centrifuges they put in place. And on the other hand, the West would suspend and backtrack on the sanctions that they have put in place. Freeze for freeze would be a different concept. The concept would be that instead of any of the states backtracking, what would be prevented is that none of the sides would be able to increase and improve the negotiating position during the time of the discussions, basically freezing any advancement. The Iranians would not add any new centrifuges, but they would have what they have. And the West would not introduce any new sanctions, but neither would they lift the existing ones. And the attractive model with this is that it would potentially open up a way so that both sides can feel that they can come to the negotiating table. But perhaps most importantly, it would eliminate the one factor that is playing to the benefit of Tehran right now, which is time. As long as negotiations are not taking place, the Iranians are building more centrifuges, which strengthens their negotiating position. It would be much more difficult to enter into talks now when they have 1,800 centrifuges than what it was when they had zero. And freeze for freeze would delay and prevent them from being able to improve their negotiating position. In addition, mindful of the difficulties that the United States had in imposing the sanctions to begin with, there is an attractiveness in the idea that you're not actually lifting the sanctions. The sanctions that are imposed stay put. They're not lifted, so you don't have to go through the process of reimposing them if talks break down. But as long as we're pursuing policies such as only focusing on more pressure and sanctions, we will obviously not be able to explore these opportunities. And the sanctions policy is not going to be effective either, I believe, because time, again, is not playing to the side of the West on this issue. First of all, sanctions under the best circumstances would probably not be effective. But mindful of the shortness of time that the United States and the West currently has, it's very difficult to see how sanctions on Iran, even the most strictest financial sanctions that the United States is imposing on Iran unilaterally, how these would be able to offset the effect of continued instability and failure of the surge in Iraq. There's two things going on at the same time. It's not just the cost that is being imposed on the Iranians. It's also what is the cost imposed on the United States if its policies in Iraq continue to go in the wrong direction. In 6 months' time, when Petraeus is coming back to Congress to report on the effectiveness of the surge, sanctions may likely have imposed a major cost on the Iranians, but the damage done to the United States and the political pressure over here may offset that by quite a lot. And in relative terms, the Iranians may be in an even stronger position then than they are now, particularly since they most likely will have 3,000 centrifuges by that time. Then we have the Israeli factor, in which the Israelis are telling the United States that they would like to see a timetable for the sanctions. Sanctions should only be working and given a chance to work until the end of 2007. After that, other options, read the military options, should be considered. When Shaul Mofaz was here about a week ago, according to Israeli TV, he also said that after that, Israel would take military action. What that, in essence, is saying is that the military option is the one that is going to be pursued, but I don't think there's anyone, even in the United States government, that believes that sanctions, by the end of this year, in the next 6 months, will be effective. They have been utterly ineffective so far, and there's no reason to believe that they would suddenly become successful. The problem, of course, for Israel is that Israel does not have a military option. Israel's option at this stage is to pressure the United States to take military action, because the Israeli calculation is that 3,000 centrifuges on Iranian soil, which would end up likely be remaining in Iran if there is a negotiation between the United States and Iran, would still pose a major danger to Israel, whether Iran weaponizes or not. And the reason being is that the balance of power in the region would fundamentally shift to the disfavor of Israel, and it would make it much more difficult for Israel, for instance, to be able to pursue unilateral peace deals, etc. It would be under much more pressure, and it would be faced with situations in which it would have to make territorial concessions that it so far has been unlikely and unwilling to do. Not necessarily the fact that the capability, particularly the capability that is not even weaponized, in and of itself would constitute an existential threat. So when you combine these things and then you think about the third factor. In 2003, the Iranians sent a proposal to the United States, right after the fall of Baghdad, in which they put on the table all the various issues, except one very important one, which was human rights, that have been a contention between the United States and Iran. The offer was made, it was sent through the Swiss intermediaries to the United States. Basically, within the framework of the negotiations, the Iranians offered to end all support for Islamic Jihad and Hamas, turn Hezbollah into a mere political organization, which means disarming them, opening up the nuclear program, and remember, at the time, they had no centrifuges, no enrichment program. Cooperating against all terrorist organizations, above all Al-Qaeda, and perhaps most importantly, signing on to the Beirut Declaration, the Saudi peace plan that is up in discussions once more, in which the entire Arab world would en masse recognize Israel if Israel recognized a Palestinian state. The offer was made, but it got no response. The Bush administration chose not to even give the Iranians a response, and this had devastating effects, of course, in Iran. Now, the conclusion drawn on the U.S. side as to why Iran chose to make an offer in which they basically offered to change every policy the United States has had a problem with Iran was that Iran was at the time very, very fearful because the United States had just taken out the Taliban and had taken out Saddam Hussein in 3 weeks, a task that the Iranians failed to do after 8 years of warfare. So if the conclusion is that the Iranians offered this because they were weak, the next step means that if you want to get a similar type of offer today, you need to again put the Iranians in a very weak position. You have to impose more sanctions. a military blockade, an economic blockade, perhaps wave the military option very vividly in front of them to make them understand that they can still lose in a war. The problem with that reasoning is that potentially that could work if it hadn't been tried before. But if you are in Tehran right now and you have put all of this on the table at your weakest point and when the United States was at its strongest point and it was still rejected, then the conclusion is that the United States is not interested in policy changes in Iran. The United States is interested in weakening Iran, period. And if you once have been put in that position and you made an offer to kind of get out of a confrontation and it was rejected, then most likely you will not have confidence that if you are put in that situation again, you will make the same offer because you don't believe there is an interest on the United States side for you to escape confrontation. On the contrary, having gone through that experience once, Tehran is far more likely to respond to pressure and threats of war by preparing for war because it has no confidence that it can compel the Bush administration to give it a face-saving way out. So if you add all of these things together, you can pursue sanction, you can pursue all these different options, but these will ultimately deteriorate into one out of these two options. Either there's going to be comprehensive negotiations or there's going to be a comprehensive war. And when it comes to the negotiation, I think it's very, very important to take the interest of the other states in the region into account as well. Israel has a legitimate concern about U.S.-Iran relations because there is a fear that in those negotiations, the United States would sell out Israeli security interests. The Saudis and other states in the region have the same fears. Unless the negotiations are comprehensive so that these countries are also at the table, those countries will be given an incentive to undermine or at a minimum oppose these type of negotiations. The same mistake that was done by the United States, in my view, in the early 1990s, in which it was pursuing a peace process in the region that excluded some of the most powerful states in the region and gave them direct incentives to undermine that peace process, which is exactly what they did through asymmetric warfare. So, the bottom line is that at this time, while we are hearing all other types of options, geopolitical forces are reaching a climax, and in that climax, there's basically only two possible solutions. Warfare, that I believe is going to be detrimental to all players, or a comprehensive negotiation. And all the resistance that is taking place here, as well as in Tehran, against these type of negotiations is only increasing the likelihood of war. Thank you.